Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the SFLC podcast. I want to thank our sponsors, Dependable Solutions, innovating the future of your small to medium-sized business since 2012. It's 2018. If you're not accepting credit cards, you're losing money. Plain and simple. Learn how you can save 40 to 60% on your overall credit card processing bill by going to dependable-solutions.net. Again, that is dependable/solutions.net. Also, teststrips.com, that is teststrips with a Z.com. Managing diabetes is your business, making it affordable is ours. Sell your extra unused diabetes supplies for up to $50 per box and support a worthy cause. Rated a Better Business Bureau accredited A+ rating for over 5 years. Partnered with 98.5, the Sports Hub, and affiliated with the American Diabetes Association. Make sure to check them out again. That is teststrips with a Z.com.
SFLC Podcast.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to the SFLC podcast. I am Ryan Sprague here on this rainy day in Austin, Texas. Of course, want to thank Angelo Reyes for coming on and talking with us earlier today. You can catch that show on Podomatic, Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, SoundCloud, basically everywhere you're going to find the podcast, you'll be able to find that. But joining us just a little bit north of me, to recap all the craziness that Angelo and I had talked a little bit about this earlier today, is Steve Dunn from Dallas, Texas. Steve, do I even need to ask how you're doing right now?
Oh, I'm doing great. I really like the UFC's new promotional strategy where if you buy 5 fights, you get the 6th one for free.
Oh, it's outstanding, isn't it? I mean, who'd have thought? You know, normally you charge extra for stuff like that. Like, I'm sure that fight, had we known that the 6th fight was coming on, would have easily been like $75-$80.
I mean, the best part about it is that, it's a very serious thing that happened, whether you think it's like, you know, like world change or whatever, it's a serious thing, but just that flying kick that Khabib threw off of the octagon just cracked me up when I actually saw it. It's like it's a Street Fighter move. He threw a Street Fighter move in an actual fight.
Not exactly a Hadouken. I'd actually go a little bit earlier than that. It looks like when Mega Man jumps and lands is kind of how Khabib went after Dylan Danis. I mean, that's probably a more accurate way of saying it.
It was funny because I was wondering, like, the million-dollar question in my mind over the course of the weekend is like, what the fuck did Dylan Danis say? Because, you know, Khabib went through the whole week of all of Conor's nonsense, and then out of all the people he kind of goes ham on, you know, kind of outside the realm of the actual fight, is Dylan Danis? What the hell did Dylan Danis say? Like, he must be the mother of all shit talkers, because he just needed to say one thing, and immediately he has, you know, like the eagle literally took flight to whip his ass. Like, can you imagine how mad Dylan had, you know, like, you just look at the numbers of it. Like, so he's attacking a welterweight along with, like, with two other guys in the Conor McGregor corner. He didn't care. He just went airborne.
Well, and does anybody actually know what Dylan said? I think some people tried to allude to what he said.
Yeah, like, John Kavanaugh was on Joe Rogan's podcast today, and he said Dylan just kind of did a come at me, bro. Like, he just lifted his hands and, like, motioned towards himself. That's all that John Kavanaugh observed. And he, you know, the only other person that was in the action more than him was Dylan Danis. He said basically he didn't really hear anything, like, inflammatory. Just, you know, in the midst of it, Dylan's like, oh, you know, come get it. And he got it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he did. And honestly, if you go back and watch that, I mean, it's going to be a very famous photo that was taken of Khabib, you know, going airborne over Dylan Danis. But if you watch the video from different angles, you actually see John Kavanaugh. He doesn't know what to do. I think he just sits down in the midst of all of this. He's like, well, shit. So all hell just broke loose. So I'm just going to kind of chill and let it all go. It was crazy. And, you know, obviously everybody in the free-speaking world has kind of chimed in with their opinions on it. Stephen A. Smith went on earlier on ESPN and kind of downplayed the whole thing. I've heard everything under the sun. I've heard people say it was staged. I've heard people say, you know, we're going to see suspensions and, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines. We have no idea what to expect from this. So, Steve, since you so eloquently word these situations, I'm going to hypothetically ask you, if you're the Nevada State Athletic Commission, how are you approaching this situation, knowing that no real precedent has been set by the UFC yet, and the only thing that you can really go on is when we've seen stuff like this happen in boxing in Vegas?
Well, the big difference between this and, like, there's been some parallels drawn between this brawl and the bus incident, because, you know, both guys acting out and no punishment came to Connor from the UFC. So that's the precedent. Nothing's going to happen from the UFC. And kind of by extension, actually, UFC's not really going to do anything directly with this situation. All the punishments and fines and everything else is going to come from Nevada State Athletic Commission. And so if I was sitting on the Nevada State Athletic Commission, I would just fine the piss out of them, you know, like some percentage of its purse. I saw something today that said that Khabib's purse was $2 million. So I'd fine him like 10% or something like that, maybe even more, maybe like 20%. And then I would suspend him for a year, 18 months, simply because, you know, like if you act like an ass, you act like an ass. But I was acting like an ass to the point where like somebody who paid money to be there could have gotten hurt. And to me, that's just, you know, in the article I wrote about this, I didn't call this like, you know, like a blemish or like a dark spot in the sport. It's just annoying. As a fan, it's just annoying. But, you know, as for Nevada, like half of their job is safety of the athletes and safety of the people who participate in the sport and safety of the people who actually go to the sport. And just, you know, when something like this, I think you really need to bring the hammer down, because it became a matter of safety. You know, the whole thing of MMA is you're trying to contain and direct the violence in a way that's somewhat constructive. And, you know, one of the athletes just lost control of himself, and like people really could have gotten hurt. You get that many people, you know, like shoving and pushing and running around, you know, like, somebody really could have gotten severely injured, and, you know, then we'd be talking about that.
Well, and, you know, you were talking about suspending his license for a year to 18 months. When we ended up having Angelo Reyes on earlier today, he had brought up the similarities between this brawl and the Floyd Mayweather Zab Judah melee that happened, God, I want to say it was all the way back in, like, 2006, and the end result of that was that Zab Judah was actually fined $350,000 and had his license revoked for 1 year. And that was on about a fight pay-per-view buys of like $374,000. So are we expecting to see more, knowing that this is the precedent that the Nevada State Athletic Commission has done since then?
I didn't see that brawl because I don't follow boxing a tremendous amount. So, I don't know what to compare it to just in my mind. But, you know, those type of numbers, it just kind of, you know, to me, when you find somebody, it needs to be a large enough amount to where it actually hurts them. Like, you don't want to find the guy like $1,500 for this. And I think you need to keep them out long enough to where they're really, you know, they're really going to feel it. So something like a year, because if it's for a year, he's going to get stripped of the title. So then that's kind of a little bit of a double whammy. You know, that's collateral damage. I think they'll actually send a message. And the thing is, they'll probably end up suspending Connor as well. Because in my article, I kind of, from what I saw initially, he looked like he was like just purely a victim. But, you know, that was a mistake. He definitely got his licks in as well. So he'll probably be suspended and fined and everything else. And, you know, maybe the fine will end up being like much larger than Khabib, simply because he got paid way more than Khabib.
Well, yeah, and I agree with you, and that was the thing about this issue is, it's not that people are saying Connor is without blame, but it does seem like they're kind of easing up on Connor here. They're saying, oh, this should have been Khabib's night, and Khabib ruined it. Well, all the stuff that Connor said leading into this, actions have words. Right before we ended up doing this, Dwayne Finley was on Facebook Live, and you know how Dwayne is, and he was talking about how this was, you know, entertaining, but again, you don't know Khabib's backstory. You don't know his upbringing, his family. This is a guy who remains true to his religion, remains true to his family, and Connor attacked both of those. You know, that's a big no-no. So, yeah, Khabib was the one that, you know, responded to it, but Connor laid it out there, and Connor made it seem like it was okay. So, yeah, Connor definitely needs to get a little of the backlash from this as well. I agree with you.
I don't even think it's so much for what Connor said. It's just that he actually ended up throwing punches. You know, he threw punches at somebody that wasn't Khabib Nurmagomedov, so he needs to pay the price for that. And at the same time, I know people are going back to the trash talk and everything, but you know, I understand differences in culture and everything, but frankly, I believe, and I think most people believe deep down in their heart that, you know, in the realm of free speech, you don't get to hit somebody because of what they say.
I mean,
MMA is one of the rare occasions where you actually can hit somebody, but, over, you know, in Western society, I think most people, down, you know, deep down in their heart, you do not get to hit people simply because of what they say. I can say whatever I want about anything. That never gives them the right to punch me in the face.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, there's definitely a lot of hostility and a lot of aggressive behavior from other fight fans that had to deal with this. And it was just, it was crazy to me. And you're right in that situation. So, yeah, Khabib doesn't get to go after Connor. But, my God, all of the people who decided that they wanted to get angry or upset that Connor lost, or, you know, that Khabib ended up winning and then he ended up taking it one step further. It's like, I've been doing this for long enough now to know that I enjoyed watching the fight. I enjoyed watching all of the fights on this card, but I'm not going to, like, boast a loyalty and then get angry when the person that I want to win turns around and loses. That just seems silly to me. Conor McGregor or Khabib Nurmagomedov are not going to turn around and, like, pay my rent, you know, if I fall on hard times. They don't give a shit about me, you know. So I watch this purely from the entertainment aspect and from the journalistic aspect of trying to be as objective as possible. Now, if you were to ask me, who do I want to win due to the circumstances that have been thrown in front of us, yeah, I'd have preferred Khabib to win. I don't like the way Conor conducted himself. And Khabib had kind of seemed stoic throughout all of media week, so I had no reason to believe that he was going to do what he did after winning the fight. But this whole thing, I mean, it apparently sent Vegas into just a massive eruption. Case in point, when Mike Tyson is tweeting about how this brawl was bigger than when he had his brawl, you know something is big in the works there.
I mean, Dana White kind of refuted that. He brought that up in the post-fight presser talking. Like, he was actually at Tyson Holyfield. He said the brawl, you know, started near the fight and then it radiated out, like, into the audience, into the casino. You know, like, it just kept going like fire. And this one was actually relatively contained. They kept it to the immediate area around the octagon, inside the octagon, which is frankly a freaking miracle given how, you know, there's probably a big contingent of Russian fans, Irish fans, and then just generally drunk people watching fights. You know, drunk people watching anything tend to end up punching each other in the face, let alone people punching each other in the face.
Ladies and gentlemen, remember, vodka affects your blood faster than vodka, or faster than Guinness does. So
it was, you know, you look at the big picture, you know, one of the best parts about MMA is guys can't beat the tar out of each other for 15, 25 minutes, however long. And then, you know, just if you've ever been in a fight, it's really hard to be mad at somebody anymore when you literally have the opportunity to hit them as hard as you can, as many times as you can. Because, you know, like, if you're mad at somebody, that's like the ultimate expression of your anger. So, like, afterwards, everybody's like, okay, yeah, you shouldn't have said that, but whatever. But with this, Khabib was still mad. And he was like grade school mad. It's like, you know what? I'm not going to just, like, kick the crap out of you. I'm going to whoop your buddies, too.
Well, and a lot of people think that Conor kind of gave up after he got that neck crank or that head crank, whatever you want to call it. And I don't think he did. I think Conor legit got beat there, you know? He got his shots in and Khabib during the fight itself, and Khabib was just too strong. Ring rust is a real thing. I remember saying that Saturday night ahead of the fights. They said, who do you have winning? I said, Khabib. Why? Because ring rust is a bitch. You know, 2 years outside of an actual octagon, that'll do something to everybody. So, you know, we see this, and before we kind of move on down the card, are there any final thoughts that you want to put, your stamp of approval on the Khabib-Conor incident that took place?
I would just say, rather self-aggrandizing, go check out my article on MyMMAnews.com. It's not about the brawl itself. It's a guide for the hardcore MMA fan, how to basically talk to other people and basically talk to other people more like your casual MMA friends who are inevitably going to ask you about the brawl. Because I know after like the Nashville incident and Strikeforce, whenever something kind of goes off the rail with MMA, like my friends who check it out every once in a while when there's a big fight, they usually end up asking me about it. And so, yeah, I got questions about it today. Hey, did you see the thing? And, you know, what the main takeaway from this, it's not that, you know, like it's bad, whatever else, but to me, kind of as I touched on earlier, it's just annoying. As a fan, it's annoying because because somebody who really likes the sport, I want it to grow. I want it to, you know, I just want it to, like, just get better and better and better and more people get in and get better athletes and everything else. And this is the type of shit that kind of prevents that from happening. Like, these two guys, yeah, they might end up making a whole lot of money because of it. There's a rematch and whatever else. But you know, this is the type of thing that people look at from afar. It's like, I'm not gonna go to that event, or I'm not going to, like, get my kids in this, or, you know. It's the type of thing that stagnates, like, the long term for a short term gain. So it's just like, it's very annoying. Read the article; you'll be able to do a little bit of good in the world as far as, like, you know, kind of squashing out the ignorance of this type of event will definitely fertilize. And that's all I really have to say about it.
And you took the words right out of my mouth. I was actually going to cite the article that you wrote on My MMA News. Very well written, I must say. Yes, definitely go check it out. But we're going to kind of go in a Tarantino-style way of telling this story, because we went with, obviously, the biggest story on there. And now we're going to kind of go back before we get onto the main card, we look at some of the prelim card and what ended up happening. You know, Sergio Pettis ended up losing. Bad night for the Pettis brothers, if I must say. Aspen Ladd getting a very impressive win over Tanya Evinger. Is there anything
on... Zena, yeah.
Right? Right?
When all's warrior princess on.
Vincent Luke having a very impressive win over Jalen Turner. Jalen Turner just, he looked like a fish out of water in that fight. He was throwing everything he could. And he was just, it looked like he was throwing Hail Marys. And Vincent Luke just had an answer for everything that was thrown. But before we get back into the main card, which fight on the undercard impressed you the most, including the UFC Fight Pass early prelims?
Well, probably by all the prelims and everything, there's a lot of interesting things that happens. The Maynard-Lentz fight was just sad. Mm. And the Landsberg-Kunitskaya fight was sad in a whole different way. But but probably the most interesting one, just sure because you think about who the guys are and where they're coming from, it was Ryan LaFleur versus Tony Martin, because Tony Martin had been called out as the most boring fighter in the UFC, and so he kind of bounced back with that when he ended up sinking all these laser right hands into Ryan LaFleur's face and ended up getting the finish in the second round. But yeah, it was actually a sign that Ryan LaFleur didn't just get darched, but then Tony Martin just found a home for his rear hand. It was like he couldn't miss.
How many Superman punches did Ryan LaFleur attempt in that fight?
How many Superman punches? Oh,
All of them?
All the Superman punches. Nobody gets to do a throw Superman punch anymore because they're just all out at the store. And then the Vicente Luque fight and the Jalen Turner fight was interesting simply because you could tell the commentators were really trying to build up Jalen Turner. Like, it was very heavy Jalen Turner talking about how big he is and how good he was on the contender series and all that type of thing. And the whole time they're saying this, he's just kind of standing out there getting picked apart by Vicente Luque and eventually just gets knocked out during a after landing a spinning elbow. That's like the saddest thing. Like, you go through all the trouble of landing a spinning elbow in a professional fight and you still get your nose smashed in.
See, when I watched it,
I think Vicente Luque, I think he's like knocked out like most of his opponents in the UFC. Let's see here. He lost to Leon Edwards, but yeah, everybody else in his last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So he's won 4 of his last 5, and out of those 4, he's finished everybody with 3 first-round knockouts and a second-round submission. And that, like, includes – and they aren't scrubs either. It includes friend of the show, Bilal Muhammad. Sorry, Bilal. Nico Price, Chad LaPriest, and Jalen Turner. So he's knocking out, like, good guys.
He just needs to be able to do something with it. But, yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that was a fun fight for all of the, 2 minutes that it lasted. But, you know, a great card. And then we end up going right into this main event that really has, you know, just fireworks written all over it. We start with Felice Herrig and Michelle Waterson, the Karate Hottie, getting it done in decision. And pretty single-handedly. I mean, I don't think there was ever a debate as for if she had lost a round or not. But she just looked like the superior fighter. And it was interesting because she seemed to appear to be the underdog in this fight, didn't she? I mean, with all the media attention that was going on, it seemed like the people really wanted Felice Herrig to win over Michelle Waterson.
Well, I guess that all kind of depends on who you talk to, because Michelle Waterson's always going to have a size. In most fights, she's going to have a size disadvantage at strawweight because she, you know, she was the atomweight champion in Invicta. And she has gotten a bit of a favorable push from the UFC brass, and that tends to have a backlash against probably amongst some of the people that we talk about fights with. So, but this was the best part about this is it was actually a really good example of MMA judging. Usually, the person who has like the more control, whether you're holding somebody against the fence or holding them on the mat, they usually end up winning despite the fact if the other person is like landing better strikes and actually doing more damage. But in this case, they actually followed like their own criteria, and actually, I think, you know, they ended up picking the right fighter. And, you know, we always bag on MMA judging, but this is a rare occasion where we can actually sing the praises of the people who were judging this fight.
And not just that, I think this was an excellent example of how to be humble in victory. And, you know, that was something that Michelle Waterson, I really enjoyed her post-fight speech. You know, we sit here and we talk about how we have the first champion is, you know, to be not an American citizen or the first person to be whatever. She said she wants to be the first title holder to be a mom. That's kind of a cool thing to hear, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, you can understand why the UFC likes Michelle Waterson. She's such a likable person, and she's extremely skilled. On top of it, that would be really interesting because as you. Pretty much any field of work that you look at, there's always like a big chunk of like people of women who were really, really accomplished. And then they had kids and then, you know, their career kind of had to take a back seat. So it'd be really cool for Michelle Waterson to be like a pioneer in that way. It's like, hey, you can be a mom and still whip the ever loving shit out of people for a living extremely high at the highest level.
Yeah, and, you know, with that victory, I think that we're looking at the rankings. I don't know if these are up to date right now, but, you know, with the win, Michelle Waterson, I believe, sits at number 7. I don't think she passes a Tisha Torres or a Karolina Kovalevich. So you have to wonder what's next for her because the top 5 there is just loaded. You know, you wonder what happens with Claudia Gadelha. You wonder if Jessica Andrade gets the next shot at Rose Namajunas. You wonder why Joanna is still ranked as the number 1 contender when you could be putting a Tatiana Suarez up there. So Michelle Waterson could kind of be sitting in limbo for a little bit to let those top 5-6 women figure it out. Conversely, you know, you see Felice Herrig With that loss, I don't know if she drops out of the top 10 with it. I don't really know that you can, considering the people that are listed behind her. She's beaten. We'll start with Michelle Waterson. What do you see next for Michelle Waterson? Does she just take time off and figure all this stuff out in the strawweight? Or, you know, do you see some formidable opponent in the top five that she takes on next?
Oh, man, she's in a tough spot because right below her is Carla Esparza, and then you got Felice Herring and Courtney Casey, which is people she's either fought and or beaten. And then pretty much I don't really give her a chance against many people above her right now. Like, I would give her a decent chance against Tisha Torres and Karolina Kovalkiewicz, but Michelle Waterson will be absolutely smashed against Tatiana Suarez, Claudia Gadelha, Jessica Andrade, Jovanian Jacek, and, and she's already been beaten by Rose. But so, like, all the people that she would kind of have to go through to get to a title shot or kind of get farther into the top 10, you know, you got three, like, really, really strong kind of bulldozer type of women in there. And she's just, you know, you put the skill and size difference together and you get in a situation like we saw at Musasi and McDonald, to where even if the skills are equal, you know, you put an additional 10, 15 pounds of mass on somebody and she's just going to get completely controlled. Like, she was controlled a lot in this fight. She just managed to find her opportunities where she could. But you get her in there, like, with the Tatiana Suarez, and she's going to be freaking, like, 2D by the time the fight's over.
Yeah. And then also we see what a lot of people are calling Felice 2.0 coming off her second straight loss. Now, all things considered, they were both at the hands of the judges, but I don't really see what's next for Felice either, because you can't give her any other opponent ahead of her. She's already beaten the opponents that are behind her. I'm here to tell you, and it's going to piss a lot of people off. I don't care. Carla's coming off a loss. Felice is coming off a loss. I do not care that they are friends. Jesus, we've had to see freaking Serena and Venus go up against each other. I think this is the only fight that exists right now. I really do.
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that, because usually I don't know how, you know, deep their friendship goes and everything, but I imagine that the type of money they would be making and for the stakes they'd be fighting for, they wouldn't be willing to do it. I think what would be good for Felice right now, since she's coming off two losses, is she just took a little bit of a step down in competition. Maybe she fights somebody outside of the top 10, and then depending on how that goes, then you can see if she fights somebody within the top 10. So then if you get beyond right now she's ranked at number 9, right above Courtney Casey, who she lost to. But then you look at people like you got Nina Ansaroff, who I think might be booked, Alexa Grasso, Randa Marcus, Angela Hill, Mackenzie Dern. You know, like, Mackenzie Dern actually might be a decent fight. I don't know if Mackenzie's booked, but Mackenzie Dern might actually be like a decent fight for her, because that she's number 15. She's ranked quite a bit lower. But I think that's a fight that Felice could win. And if she does win, that'd be a win over like a fairly recognizable name in the division as well. So come off of two losses, a little bit of step down in competition, and if she does well, she'll be right back in it.
And Mackenzie Dern currently is not booked. You know, we saw that she ended up having that loss to Amanda Bobby Cooper, or that win against Amanda Bobby Cooper. So that could be an interesting fight. I could see that happening. But we'll move along to one of at least the most unique post-fight press conferences we've ever seen. Derek Lewis somehow finding a way to get it done against Alexander Volkov, where Volkov just controlled 95% of this fight. And then within, I think, 10 or 11 seconds, Derek Lewis finds that opening, lands that haymaker, flattens Volkov, gets the W. Did this shock you, especially having watched the fight for the first two rounds, that Derek Lewis would even have this capability?
I know he has the capability, but guys like him in fights like this are why I never bet on MMA, because I would have picked Volkov. I would have been right for like 98% of that fight, and then you just lose it. he landed, let's see here, maybe like four good punches. He landed the jab that got Volkov on one leg. He landed a haymaker to put him on his ass, and then I think he knocked him out with two punches on the ground. Four punches. After he ate, you know, like probably almost 100 strikes on the feet, and he lands four punches and that's it. And now just because of hashtag my balls was hot, he's probably going to get a number one contender spot, if not a title shot, just depending on how things kind of shake up in his division. So he'll probably end up, you know, because right now he's ranked number two. Despite how bad the fight was, he beat Francis Ngannou, who was a former title challenger. So Derek Lewis, his next fight is probably who you should call out. It should probably be Stipe.
Yeah, it should be Stipe. And then a lot of people are trying to say Curtis Blades, you know, because again, Curtis is really the only one that's going to see
Ngannou. That would be good, but like if you're Derek, why would you fight a guy? Why would you fight a guy ranked lower than you who very much has the capability to give you a lot of trouble in the area where you can finish the fight? Because most of Derek Lewis's finishes are on the ground, but then you get like a really top caliber wrestler who is ranked lower than you in the top five. I don't see Derek taking that fight unless like Stipe is like busy fighting fires or something, unless there's like no other option.
Well, we also have to figure out what's going to happen with Daniel Cormier, but was that the most interesting part of the whole night prior to the post-fight in the main event?
It's probably the most entertaining in a different way, but you know we're going to get to it in a minute. The most interesting thing that happened other than the main event and the shenanigans after the main event was the co-main event.
Oh, yeah. That co-main event, obviously. And then, of course, we had the light heavyweight fight. Dominic Reyes remains undefeated, going 10-0, getting the decision against Ovince St. Preux. And a win over Ovince St. Preux like that really kind of sets your name high if you're Dominic Reyes. I would argue that of all the people who had the fight this weekend, Dominic Reyes might have come out in a better position than when he walked in than anyone else on the card.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he jumped six spots.
Yes.
Look at it right now. He jumped six spots. So I guess he jumped from 12 to 6, and that's like over like really tough guys like Corey Anderson, Glover. He just beat Ovince. We'll see what happens with Anthony Smith. But then Misha, Shogun Hua, and Nikita Kraft. So, you know, just with the way fighters treat the rankings now, those are basically guys that he doesn't have to fight now. He's coming off a big win. So he's looking at top five. He went from 12, now he's looking at top five. So he can challenge, you know, like a good fight for him would be Jimmy Manua, who's just coming off of that injury right before UFC Sao Paulo, he ripped his hamstring. But then you got Jimmy Manua, Latifi, Blachowicz, Ozdemir is booked. Gustafsson's waiting for Jones. But yeah, I mean, that's actually kind of nuts that he goes from number 12 to now he's going to be like a top five opponent. You know, it kind of shows how much UFC wants new blood in the light heavyweight division. And, you know, we got to admit, it really does need new blood in the light heavyweight division. And Dominic Reyes has always been interesting because he's the type of athlete that MMA has always desired. Like, you know, somebody who could do well in, you know, the ball sports, the basketball, baseball, football, somebody who's like really big, but really athletic and, you know, everything else. They tend to go for the more lucrative sports. That's why we have so many like 170, 155 size guys, but this is a person who got, I think he got to like, you know, basically just dipped his toe into professional football and then it didn't quite work out. But now we got like that type of a 205 pound guy who's like just really fast and really powerful and has like just a kind of unique athletic abilities. And now he's just like right in the thick of it. And I think he can very much beat pretty much anybody in the top five if he just minds his P's and Q's. So it could be, yeah, like it was the introduction to a new contender in the light heavyweight picture.
Yeah, and then of course we get to see in a couple of weeks UFC Fight Night where Volkan Ozdemir will take on Anthony Lionheart Smith, and it'll be very interesting because you have to think of how many spots Dominic Reyes has jumped with his victory over OSP. That if Anthony Smith is able to knock out a number two ranked fighter, does he go up and surpass Dominic Reyes again? Is that something that you see? And do you see these two fighters having to fight each other very much in the near future?
It would be interesting to have them fight each other in the near future, but I almost think you would be like kind of blowing up their momentum if you take Anthony Smith is far from a prospect, but he's very much a new entity in the light heavyweight division. So I think it would be good to have you know, give him a little more time before you put those two guys into it. Because if you put relatively new to the division, Anthony Smith against Dominic Reyes, you're going to derail one of them. And they're like the main source of new momentum in the division right now. So I think you put like Dominic Reyes in there with somebody right above him. And then depending where, depending on how Anthony Smith does, he'll probably end up in the same position like Dominic Reyes, like just right around the top five, and then have him fight somebody around there. And then, you know, if you look, if they both get past that, then you put them in together, and that's a title eliminator, which is excellent because then you have a contender at 205 who people are like really excited to see, who kind of, and that kind of wakes up that division, and it doesn't involve somebody named Cormier, Jones, or Gustafson.
Yeah. You know, before I move on, I completely forgot something that Derek Lewis said. He said that Trump called him and said he wanted him to knock the Russian out, and that's what he ended up doing in between rounds. God damn it. There are so many one-liners from Derek Lewis. I forgot that gem.
I just wonder, the question is, like, was he just spitballing, or did, like, he have that kind of, like, rolling around in his head? Which, even if he did, he got punched in the head so much, like, you could forgive him if he forgot, like, oh, yeah, I'm really going to, like, hit him with a zinger when I'm talking to Joe. So, like, that's, like, just off the top of his dome.
I mean, I don't know if he was punch drunk, but he was hilarious. Oh, my God. The one-liners. We could make, like, ringtones and clips on every line that he had in that post-fight. But, again, I digress. We'll get back to it. Big win for Dominic Reyes. Very interesting to see what happens with the light heavyweight division coming up towards the end of October, because we could see a lot of movers and shakers. And I think that it's, you know, we're rife for some sort of a shakeup in this division while we await to see if Alexander Gustafsson's going to end up getting John Jones, if DC's going to get John Jones, if John Jones is moving up to heavyweight. There's still so many unanswered questions we don't know. But we move right along to what I consider to be the best fight on the entire card. It wasn't a melee. It wasn't just an absolute destroying battle. Tony Ferguson and Anthony Pettis went to absolute war. Ended up, I believe, at the end of the second round with Anthony Smith breaking his hand and the corner stopping it in between the second and third round. Tony Ferguson coming off a very impressive win within a mere 6 months of completely tearing his LCL after that trip when he was supposed to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov. Is there anything else to really say about this fight other than Tony is an absolute warrior?
Yeah, like, you know, everybody was asking questions about the knee, and like that, his injured leg got kicked within like the first 30 seconds, and then he was relatively fine. You know, he got rocked twice and everything, and he just did his normal Tony thing where he took quite a few licks, but he gave way more than what he was taking, and then he ended up getting like a very weird but oddly compelling post-fight speech / post-fight pressure speech.
But, oh, man.
You know, the big thing other than the fight being like extremely entertaining, like in just every way you can imagine, I just want, you know, you had to take a moment to commend Duke Rufus to be one of the few corner guys who will actually stop a fight in the interest of their guy's health. Because, like, you know, Anthony Pettis was definitely coming out on the worst end of the exchanges at the end of the second round. And, you know, he's going to lose one of his major weapons, and it was only going to go downhill from there. Like, you know, I'm certainly that Anthony doesn't like having a loss on his record, but, you know, he's going to be able to compete in more fights because Duke, you know, was brave enough to look after him. So once again, like, we were praising the judges over here. Now I'm going to praise the corner, which is something that doesn't really happen in MMA.
You're absolutely right. And, of course, we have not seen the last of Mr. Pettis, and you feel bad because he was an absolute warrior. And I even think he was the one that mentioned it. If we go back and listen to the audio, I think he said that he broke his hand. And then when the judges came over and the refs came over, I'm sorry?
Yeah. Like, he sat down at the end of the second round and he kind of had this like far off stare, look in his eye. And he's like, I broke my hand. So then Duke kind of very, you know, like a fatherly voice, like, hey, you want to keep going? I'm not going to let you go if you don't want to keep going. Mm-hmm. And then he just, you know, Anthony said nothing, which, you know, in fighter speak probably means yes. Like, you can't imagine, you know, Anthony Pettis saying like, yes, could you please stop the fight now?
Yeah, exactly.
I'd really appreciate it if you could stop the fight now.
But again, just an all-out war, a bloody mess, everything we wanted it to be. Tony Ferguson is back. He is officially moved up to the number one contender. But we'll talk about his post-fight presser in a minute. But of all of the mayhem to happen in the lightweight division, we were finally going to get clarity. We were finally going to see this. And I know that Dana White was going to hate his life if he tried to make Tony Khabib. I think this would have been the fifth time he's tried to make it. And now we have to wait and see what's going to happen with Khabib, if Tony's going to fight it. But man, Tony just cannot catch a break. He comes off a very impressive victory over Anthony Pettis, a fighting from behind victory. He's back. He's ready to go. It's a belt that he said was his in the first place. And it's hard to disagree with him. But now what does Tony do? Do they strip Khabib? If the Nevada State Athletic Commission comes back and punishes Khabib, do they strip Khabib and give Tony the belt to replace the interim belt that they stripped him of because he got injured?
Like no take backsies with the interim belt.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much. The question isn't so much, will Tony fight for a belt next? Because he will fight for a belt. The question is, like, is it going to be a regular belt or an interim belt? Who the hell is he going to fight?
Yeah.
I'm going to assume that Khabib is going to be suspended for long enough to where they're going to take the title off him. I'm also going to assume that Conor is going to either be suspended or he's just going to take enough time off to where he's going to kind of not be involved as well. And not to mention, not that this would stop the UFC, but he wouldn't really deserve to get back in there for the title against Tony because he just lost the title and very cleaned it in a very like clean way. But that doesn't mean it won't happen. So kind of looking down, you almost have to say that the winner of Poirier and Diaz would end up being Tony's dance partner if Khabib and Conor are kind of taken out of it.
Yeah,
that's an interesting fight. You know, like Tony versus Dustin would make sense because they're closer to the rankings. You know, Nate Diaz is kind of in his own little world. He's just hanging out there at number 10. But that fight is just, you know, it's going to have enough momentum and everything at UFC 230 that, you know, like Tony versus Dustin Poirier, Tony versus Nate Diaz is compelling for the lightweight title. And yeah, I think that would make everybody happy. You know, pretty much Tony's one of those guys I would pay to watch, like, you know, fight a tree, which I think he's done in videotape. he's just super entertaining. He's one of those guys where his offense is interesting enough and his defense is bad enough to where his fights are always interesting. It's almost like a Justin Gaethje to where like, you know, he has this porous defense that just makes him more compelling to watch.
Definitely. And then again, we have his post-fight presser. And a lot of people were happy to see Tony come back, get the victory. We know he's going to be in title contention. And then they heard his press conference, and they weren't so thrilled with him. Steve, what did you take away from Tony Ferguson's post-fight press conference?
I love hearing Tony talk. What are you talking about? He's in this weird kind of in between world where you don't know if he's like punch drunk or if he's just kind of odd, but he does, like, he was talking about how he's throwing his punches like baseball pitches, he's an interesting, unique guy, but like it all works. He beats the shit out of dudes. He's like, you know, one of the top lightweights in the world right now. He's extremely entertaining. I'll listen to Tony, you know, talk about anything. I'll listen to him like read Goodnight Moon, just to put his spin on it. Yeah, I don't know how you can't like Tony. Like, he literally went from being like just covered head to toe in blood and came out looking like $1 million and talked to the press for 20 minutes, like with really interesting, non-canned stream of consciousness stuff. Like, he's a truly unique guy on the mic and in the cage, and I'm so glad to have him back within the calendar year of his knee exploding.
I mean, you don't see that often. And like I said, massive kudos, because, you know, I've seen those ligament injuries, those knee ligament injuries, and it is not fun to come back from. I mean, it sucks. And we're talking LCL completely torn, like ripped off the bone torn. It's not good. But as we wrap a pretty little bow around UFC 229, we have, or what we thought was going to be, a couple weeks off from UFC, and we do. But then we get ready to move right into Bellator Friday and Saturday with Bellator 207 and Bellator 208 separated by less than 24 hours away from each other. And Steve, I know that we've got a lot to talk about. We have the heavyweight semifinals going on. Matt Mitrione taking on Ryan Bader on Friday, October 12th. Then we turn around and we get to see Fedor versus Chael Sonnen on Saturday, October 13th. Off the cusp, which fight to you is more compelling?
Most compelling one is Mitrione and Bader, just because they're younger and they're closer to their prime. The Fedor Chael Sonnen fight, it's almost like a Mad Lib of a fight. You just take two guys that you know and you just throw them in there.
But still, you know that Chael Sonnen is a master of running his mouth, and we saw what happens when somebody who's mastered the art of shit-talking goes up against a Russian. I have a feeling that UFC 229 taught us some lessons, and Chael will probably be a little better about it than Conor was. But we'll start with, of course, Bellator 207, Matt Mitrione versus Ryan Bader. And as you look at this fight, I think Ryan Bader is just a bigger guy, but Matt Mitrione, man, he has that one-punch knockout power. So, and he also has, like, freaking 50 pounds on Ryan Bader. Do you still give this to Ryan Bader? Do you think that Matt Mitrione is going to shock some people on Friday?
No, I would give this to Mitrione all day, every day, simply because I think he has a little bit more varied striking, and he's just so much goddamn bigger.
Yeah, that's true.
Because he's like football big, you know? It's just like it's a different – it's like he's big and he's fast. And Ryan Bader is, you know, we got to say what it is. He's a light heavyweight coming up in the heavyweight. So probably weigh like 220, 230. And then Matt Mitrione will have a good 20, 30 pounds on him. And they have comparable skills. Like Ryan Bader's going to have better wrestling. But, you know, you get to shave some of the edge off of that just because of the weight. You know, if he gets like a full body lock on Mitrione, you really think he's going to be able to get him down, like a fully resisting Mitrione? You know, almost for Ryan Bader, it's in his best interest to keep it on the feet, yeah. which is still like kind of pick your poison, because Mitrione, I think, he has a more varied striking game. Like he actually like throws leg kicks and things, where Mitrione's basically, you know, he's just kind of milling around until he can land a big right hand. And as we saw way back when, in the first Diaz McGregor fight, you take a guy who's a power puncher at one division and put him up, you know, that power doesn't always carry over. And like Mitrione took a full Fedor right hand in the face and, you know, ended up getting up from that. So I can't imagine Ryan Bader having like as much kind of raw horsepower, you know, any more raw horsepower than Fedor. So everything on paper says Mitrione for me. I think he gets it done. I think he gets it done in the second round. I think in the first round, they're going to be kind of playing pitter-pat with each other. But as soon as like they lock up or anything like that, just the size, he's just going to get him pinned up against the cage or pinned to the floor and be able to just ground and pound him out. So I'm calling Mitrione by finish.
Wow. I actually saw this one kind of going for Bader. But you know me, I always choose the guy who's more elusive, that has that speed, because we know he has the technique. And like, look, I don't care. If you're a professional fighter, I don't care if you're fighting at 205 or if you're fighting at 245. You throw a punch and you throw a kick relatively the same as far as I'm concerned. Like if somebody, like I weigh like 165 right now. If somebody who's 155 pounds or even 150 pounds comes up and that guy's in good shape and he clocks me in the jaw, I'm probably going down. Like I think we're putting too much on the weight.
Yeah, I could see that, but I'm just you're just having flashbacks to Musasi McDonald, where that, you know, I think with Musasi McDonald, the weight difference between them was like, it wasn't that much even on fight night. It was like 10, 15 pounds or something. And this, it's gonna be like a solid 20 pounds.
Yeah, no, that's
least,
true.
At least.
So we'll see what happens. We'll see if you know, size versus speed, what ends up happening. And then, of course, in another feature fight, we have Big Country Roy Nelson going up against Sergey Karatov, another USA versus Russia. Boy, are we ever going to learn our damn lessons here, Steve. Is this just getting ready to brew over?
No, I think it's just a matter of Roy Nelson's a big enough name to where you need to put him in a main or co-main, but he's not good enough to really fight anybody that has a Wikipedia page. So this is actually pretty decent matchmaking because they have similar records. Sergey Kartanov actually has a better record than Nelson. So this might actually end up being an upset because Kartanov is 6'4". So he's going to have a bit of reach on Roy Nelson as well. And Nelson just, you know, you could say that his striking is limited or that he's distilled his game down to a fine point, but he's pretty much just a right hand now. He's a right hand and a gut. And I'm thinking that Kartanov is going to be able to handle that pretty easily. He's just going to keep him at range and wait for Nelson to get tired, and he's just going to waylay him on him for 3 rounds. They'll probably end up getting the decision.
All right. And then, of course, we go right in from Connecticut right into Uniondale, New York for the following night with Fedor versus Chael Sonnen. Again, Intrigue listed all over it. And Jesus Christ, do they have Chael Sonnen listed at 265 pounds? Am I reading that right?
Yeah, so the web guy for Bellator is just kind of spitballing on that one.
Did he eat Ariel Helwani? Like, is that how he gained that weight? Because there's no way.
Yeah, he's on the Jay Glazer diet. I mean,
I'm just like, I'm seeing Fedor, 225. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. He might be a couple pounds over, whatever. It's Fedor. And then, you know, Chael, 265. Wait a minute, I call bullshit. There's no way that one's right. Wow, somebody dropped the ball.
He's going to have Ryan Bader on his back for this one.
I'm sorry?
He's going to have Ryan Bader like on his back as a backpack for this one. He jumped on the scale with like two dudes.
Oh, my God. And again, like, love Chael Sonnen to death. I mean, the guy talks, and he lights up a room every time he talks. But, yeah, man, you ain't no 265. You might want to get that changed, pretty please. But, again, we know that the winner of these two fights are going to face off against each other at the end of the year. So we already know that you have Matt Mitrione moving on to the finals. You have Fedor and you have Chael going up against each other the next night. Steve Dunn, who do you have being on the other side of that bracket coming in for the heavyweight world title?
Oh, Fedor just smokes him. Absolutely smokes him.
Really?
Yeah, because Chael's like a big talker and everything, but he's actually a pretty boring fighter.
Like, tell me how you like really feel.
Like, he's really pillow fisted. Like, he hasn't knocked anybody out, and he doesn't really take people down who have any type of wrestling. He just kind of clinches onto them. Like, when he fought Rampage, he couldn't really take Rampage down, but he could definitely control him up against the cage and everything else. But Fedor just has like explosive animal power. Has been in there like with legit heavyweights. I think he's gonna be faster than Chael. He hits harder than Chael. And he has enough wrestling to where he's not going to be able to just be held on his back. So the only way Chael really wins this is if he's able to avoid those haymakers and really just kind of clinch up with Fedor. I don't think he's going to be able to do that for the entire thing. I think in the first round, when Fedor's just like crushing everything, he's just going to completely just blitz Chael, and that'll be that.
Yeah. I can see that. And actually that makes a lot of sense. I was originally wanting to go with Chael, but yeah, I can't do that to Fedor. You know, Fedor knocks out.
No. The best thing you could do is not pick Fedor if you like Fedor.
Yes, the curse is real, right? Is that what Mike Heck said?
He said the jinx is real.
The jinx is real. God damn it, Mike Heck. Fine.
Well, he did win. He won the fight.
He did, and as a matter of fact, I called the majority of these wins.
Depending how you look at it, maybe he won two fights that night. All or nothing.
Oh, man. Poor Dylan Danis, because again, for all intents and purposes, I like Dylan. I think Dylan's a cool guy. I think he gets misrepresented. Let him fight a few more times in Bellator. I think he's a funny guy. He has a great character, and, he just talked, shit at the wrong Russian. Or Dagestani.
He's the interview. He's the interview I want to get.
Oh, my God.
Even beyond Conor, beyond Khabib, I want to talk to Dylan Danis, because Dylan's a colorful guy. And you have to know, like there's a lot of posturing in MMA. It's just kind of part of like sports in general. So you have to know that, in like the heat of the moment after the fight, he does like come at me, bro. And he probably didn't expect him to like go airborne. So I just want to see the transition. I want to just like really dive into the transition and dance his mind where it goes like, hey, screw that guy, whatever. what's he doing?
I mean, look, I'll try. I'll even wear the same sunglasses. I have no problem with that. If Dylan wants to come on the show, I'm all for it. Like, I'll wear those same obnoxious sunglasses that you guys all hate so much just to secure getting the interview with Dylan Dennis.
Yeah, I totally, because you just have to, you know, talking about being like I said, you know, Khabib just went through so much trash talking, just one little thing from Dennis is what put him over the edge. You like it, you know, get to, like, from Dylan's perspective, like really? Me? Like, come on, man. You know, he just beat his guy on the ground too. Like, the whole reason Dylan was there was he was, you know, the grappling guy, and his boy lost with grappling. So that's yeah. And then, like, you flying drop kick him in the face.
And that was a legit welterweight, right? Like 170, so yeah. He's probably walking around.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, he fights at welterweight, so he's probably like 190 then if he's between fights.
Yeah,
you know, so like, and you know, Khabib maybe, you know, blossomed up to like actual 170. So still, he's like going after. Like I said, like, this really shows, like, just, you know, like, how courageous or crazy Khabib is, depending on how you look at it, because he's attacking a guy who's much bigger than him, and then the bigger guy has like two of his buddies right there.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It wasn't like the thing like you've seen like with the Dolly incident or like what they did with Arm Lobov or anything else where it's like a whole big group of dudes, you know, gang up on somebody. Like, he just lone wolfed it.
Yeah, his Dagestani corner had to try and follow him. They were a good 10-15 seconds behind, but Khabib didn't give no map. Never mind. He just went right at it. But anyway, so and then, of course, we'll get back to Bellator. The featured lightweight fight of Bellator 210 is going to be Benson Henderson versus Saad Awad. And is that something that you end up seeing as being as intriguing as the World Heavyweight Grand Prix semifinals?
I would say yes, just because, you know, these guys are actually, you know, closer to their primes, and, you know, they have very similar records. Actually, so I think this will be like a really good, it's a really good matchup, and we'll just see, you know, like, Benson Henderson had some struggles in Bellator. So if Benson gets this, it kind of shows that he's back on the horse. And if Saad gets this, you know, he has a pretty big win over a well known name. So it's excellent matchmaking because, you know, like, on paper they're very similar, and a win for either guy does a lot for the career. So yeah, I'm really interested because, you know, like, most of the time Benson is very entertaining. He wasn't in that fight he had with I think Patricky Pitbull, but every other time he's, you know, he's spectacular to watch.
Yeah. Let's see here. So we were able to break down the craziness that was 229. Stepped a little bit into Bellator, and boy, thanks to McGregor and Khabib, there's really not much else to say, unless I'm missing something that you wanted to talk about, Steve.
I think we touched on enough. It's going to be done to death over the next couple of weeks.
Yep, and for those of you listening,
as far as just the shit going that went off after 229, I think we gave it the attention it was due on this show. And if it was my world, we would never speak of it again.
Well, I don't know that we're going to have that say for us. But it looks like, I mean, again, it was at least entertaining. That's for damn sure. So with that in mind, I think we can kind of call it a wrap. And I know for everybody who's tuning in, you're used to hearing us on Wednesday or Thursday, depending on when you tune in. We got these kind of schedules changing a little bit. And, you know, Steve and I will get a little bit more into that as time goes on. But definitely a very interesting weekend that we had, and we have a very interesting Bellator weekend ahead of us. Steve, obviously you had a really well-written article for MyMMA News. I will be posting one with Carrington Banks, who is returning this weekend to Bellator, so you can check that out on MyMMA News. And am I missing anything in between, Steve?
I would just say, it's a good time to be a fight fan. Like, you don't, you know, what's better than one card, two cards?
Yeah.
So, like, enjoy the Heavyweight Grand Prix this weekend. You know, It'll be good for the UFC to take a week off after you know after the sixth. So I like watching Bellator. It's just, you know, it's a little bit refreshing. Like, it's still MMA and everything, but you just don't get so bogged down in all the extra shit that comes with watching the UFC. And, you know, with the momentum they're having with the two tournaments going on, and they're really starting to get, like, some exciting prospects, you know, Aaron Pico being chief among them, it's becoming, like, a really – in my eyes, it's becoming a comparable product. And I watched the Musasi-McDonald card. I don't think we touched on that on this show just because scheduling and everything. But, like, I watched it on DAZN, and it was seamless. It's absolutely seamless.
I've heard a lot of people not happy with DAZN, though. I don't know. I don't know if you checked the numbers on that. If that was something that we need to look at, or if we're just going to give it a couple more weeks of going through the zone before we really break down numbers.
I know. I heard people had trouble with the stream, but, like, for me, it was like pristine, absolutely pristine. Didn't have, like, a slowdown resolution or anything else. And, you know, like, I don't, you know, you didn't have to deal with all, like, typical like either Fox Sports or pay-per-view pacing. It was just fight, 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 fight. So I'm really looking forward to it. Right now, I like DAZN, which it pains me just to say that, but truth is what it is.
There you go.
You know, you sign up for DAZN, you get the first month free. So I would say, if you haven't signed up for it, just sign up for it. You know, explore all the different things they got on there. They got boxing, they got tennis, they got all sorts of things. Check it out. If you don't like it, you can just bail. You can bail.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that covers everything for us, Steve. So we're gonna go ahead and call it a day. And obviously, it's early enough in the week, so if we end up hearing anything, you probably won't be the last time you hear from us for this week, but wanted to get this out for you and really kind of go through our own thoughts and opinions on what happened over the weekend. So I appreciate the time, Steve, and for everybody out there tuning in, we really appreciate it. Go ahead and follow us, like us on Facebook, Twitter. You can give us a follow, share on Stitcher and iHeartRadio and iTunes. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. We will talk to you soon, and enjoy a little bit of a week off from at least UFC, and we'll hit you up again as more news emerges from everything that's happened in UFC and MMA. On behalf of Steve Dunn, I am Brian Sprague, saying thanks for tuning in, everybody.